You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 55 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the Manchester Derby and wondering if Rafael really could handle 12 rounds with Tevez. We'll be hailing Park's heroics during the last gasp win over Wolves, and a Villa fan joins us on the line to preview this weekend's encounter.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 55 of the redcafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and yes, I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Guys, how are you this week?
I'm very good, thanks, Steve. Obviously, the football related was an all right week. Got a win and a draw, but yeah, in life, generally, okay, just working and more work, so yeah, brilliant.
Dov, you okay this week?
Yeah, no, I'm very good. I made a discovery this evening. I discovered the best pizzeria in Savona, the place where I'm living. It's been nearly 2 months, and countless trips to various pizzerias to check them out and see how good they are, but I found the best one tonight and I'm very, very happy with life. So yeah, it's all good.
Well, we'll get cracking then and kick off the show by obviously looking at the most recent game, which well, of course, was the Manchester Derby, the 0-0 draw with City. Dan, uninspiring, that's been a word that's been used quite a lot really over the last couple of days to sort of describe it. How would you assess the performance in general and also the result as well?
I thought the performance was all right. I thought the midfield played very well, but I thought Berbatov did okay up front. You know, I think the way that City started, I was fearing the worst a little bit, because I thought City in the first 5-10 minutes, I think they were about us. We didn't have the ball for much of that beginning 15 minutes, and I thought they were going to nick a goal in the opening stages. But you know, we kept calm and defended well, and then I think from then on, I think we took over the game, controlled midfield. Tevez didn't really have much of the ball. Milner was pretty average, and Silva didn't really do anything to influence the game either. So from that point of view, I think we controlled it well. And although a point's a good result, I think I said that beforehand, but the way the game panned out, you could have probably seen us go for the win a little bit more, maybe been a bit more bold with our substitutions.
Yeah, I mean, would that be something you're a bit disappointed with, Dov? I mean, the fact we seem to be not dominating as such, but we were in control of possession. We were knocking it about nicely. And yeah, I mean, I suppose City were there for the taking, really.
I think the two teams, I would say that they set out, both of them were quite defensive. I mean, United got sort of 9-10 men behind the ball on lots of occasions, and City, that's pretty much how they played the whole game, and that's how they play their football. They get guys behind the ball. So I think when you've got a team that's set out as defensively set, it's going to be hard to break them down. And I didn't think maybe United showed as much sort of forward momentum and creativity that they could have. They didn't really go for it, whereas, like you say, they were for the taking, they didn't go for it. So I suppose it's a little bit disappointing, but City organised themselves, I thought, quite well. But again, even they lacked any sort of imagination. They were sort of completely uninspiring. I think maybe Zabaleta had one shot, and Tevez's free kick were more or less the only chances they had. Whereas I thought we could have helped Dimitar Berbatov out a little bit. As much as it pains me to say it, he did not bad.
Dan, Michael Carrick, I'm usually one of the first to sort of jump on his back when he's not been playing well. But no, credit where it's due. I thought he really looked the part, didn't he? In midfield against City.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't remember one time when he gave the ball away when he had that sloppy pass in the second half. But, you know, apart from that, I thought, he controlled the game well. He played it nice and simple. He played it into Berbatov a few times and kept us ticking over very nicely. And that's what Carrick could do when he's on top form. And especially Capello was there as well. I think it'll do his chances no harm, because I thought Barry was pretty average again. Every time I see Gareth Barry, I don't see how he gets in England starting 11, to be honest with you.
I completely agree with you there. But as well with Carrick, I think I found that he was like throwing his body into tackles. He was really looked like he was up for it, and you don't really see that from a player like Carrick. He just seems to be a obviously quality on the ball, and but not a battling midfielder like a Darren Fletcher. But he really showed that side of his game as well, that he can do that sort of thing, roll his sleeves up when required.
Well, I think he knows as well, you know, this is a big chance for him to get his place back in the starting 11. He's been on the fringes most of the season and a bit of last season as well, where he didn't play very well last year, you know, in all. But he's still got the ability to control a game in midfield. I think he's probably better in a midfield three rather than a two. And I think that's where he excels, when he can be the one that's spare in the middle. He gets a bit of time on the ball, can knock it about. But like you say, you know, his tackling last night was first class, and he was you know, putting pressure on the ball. And I thought that, you know, I thought that's his best game from what I can remember for a very long time.
Before we move on, as if it needs any sort of any more promotion, but obviously the big fight this weekend is David Hay, Audley Harrison. But a bit of a different kind of fight, a South American flavour to it. Obviously, Rafael and Tevez and their little scuffle the other night. I mean, who would come out on top in 12 rounds between those two?
Well, I think if you look at Tevez, he looks like a rabid dog. He just doesn't look like a guy who you'd like to see on a dark night, or just a guy you'd like to see in general. I was wondering what Rafael was thinking about. It's like, Tevez, he'll eat you alive, Rafael. Just stay back. Don't worry.
No, Dov, you're having it all wrong. You got to spot the little Brazilian here. You know, he's grown up with his twin brother. He's been fighting in the streets of Brazil since he was like 4 years old. He's been for everything, that guy. He's probably had a gun to his head and everything. And he's just, I'd back Rafael all day long. I think Tevez looked like he was a little bit scared.
So, well, one thing though, like, Tevez won't be able to do any trash talk because his English isn't very good. So Rafael would win that battle.
He's probably just barking at him. I don't know. Maybe.
Is Rafael's English any good then? Because I saw was it against Wolves? I think it was Fabio who was getting instructions to pass on to Bebe or something like that. But not sure if Raphael's fluent in English, is he?
Maybe that's why Fabio doesn't play. He's his translator
in his corner, fighting his corner. Right. Well, we'll move on then to look at the 2-1 win over Wolves on Saturday. The last gasp victory in the end. Dan, relief, I think that's probably the right word, isn't it? In the end, obviously, last second goal from Park. And, well, he really stepped up, didn't he? And made it count when we really needed him.
He did. I mean, he's not been in the best of form this season. I mean, he's said that openly himself. But I think the last few games, he's done okay. I thought he was all right last night. Didn't do anything spectacular. But he worked hard and got through it and did a job for the team. And obviously on Saturday, his two goals were really good. I mean, the first one, I mean, you might think it's an easy chance, but he's one-on-one with Hanneman, and he's tucked it away very nicely. And the second one, of course, he takes on the responsibility himself, you know, drives into a box, even does a little fake shot as well, and puts it in the bottom corner. So, I mean, you can't really take it away from him. And he's, you know, as long as he can keep that form going, he deserves to stay in the team until maybe Geese gets back on his feet, gets, you know, back to full fitness. Park's done a decent job.
Dov, great to see Park playing well, but on the other side, there was, after they'd shown so much promise in the Champions League as well, I mean, Bebe and, to a lesser extent, Gabriel Obertan, they weren't really at it, were they? And it was a bit of a shame, considering, as I said, they were so good against Bursaspor. I mean, is that slightly harsh an assessment on both of them, that they weren't really on their game?
I'd say, I'm going to defend Obertan a little bit here. I'd say maybe his end product wasn't the best, but I thought he looked like he was trying to do something. He didn't manage to do it, but it looked like he was trying his best. Obviously, he was given a bit of freedom as well, which is good to see. I think maybe a bit harsh on him. I thought Bebe was a lot worse. We discussed this before coming on here, that he can't seem to cross a ball. After two good games in the trot, one against Wolves, then Bursaspor, it seems that he's not regressed, but it seems like putting in some good performances in terms of effort. He wants to go by his player. He keeps trying the same thing again and again and again, but his final ball, like you said, was just non-existent.
Dov, that's something that can possibly, you know, be taught, though. I mean, I think it's more to do with, you know, composure, really, on the ball. He seemed to rush his final decision. He knew exactly what he wanted to do with it. But he got too much purchase on the ball, and, you know, someone just needs to tell him that he doesn't have to smash it across the box. You know, he can. There's different varieties of crossing. But like you said, you know, he did everything up until his delivery. you know, fairly well. Some of his passes were okay, and I think he probably needs to learn a bit more positional sense as well. But I think that those are things that can be taught into a player. And I know I'm bigging him up there, but I think that, you know, he has got some ability. Obviously, maybe not as much as what 7.5 million would suggest, but
yeah. Well, I think like a lot of people say, the raw talent's there. And he's honed a little bit. I think that will happen. Like you say, that can't be coached into him. And if there is raw talent there, which I'm agreeing, I think there is, that you can see that he's a good football player. He just needs to sort of learn to play for Manchester United, given that he's played in the Portuguese third division like all his career, more or less, in the Holmes World Cup. So
I just thought he looked a little bit nervous. That's all. You know, I mean, he came on, probably wasn't expecting to come on, especially that early. And he came on and he did okay, but everyone was poor on the day, and I think everyone's singling out Bebe just because he put a few bad crosses in. Yeah, they were awful crosses, but hopefully he'll learn from that. You know, he's not done badly in the other games that he's played, so hopefully he can just pick himself up and get on with it.
If he wants any inspiration, he just has to look at his fellow countrymen, really, doesn't he? I mean, Nani, bit different, because Nani's, I think, more of a flair player, isn't he? But obviously, he was at the start very, very, lot of question marks over him as to whether he was going to be able to cut the mustard, and now he's obviously producing. So, just
Bebe physically as well. He looks like a footballer. You know, he's tall, he's athletic, he's fast. You know, it's just the little things that need homing in on, I suppose.
Obviously, nightmare for Rowan Hargreaves, Dan, coming on, starting, and then surprisingly starting. I think it was a shock to everyone, and especially to you in the ground. Dan obviously texted me saying you couldn't believe it, that he was out there. But I suppose if there is any sort of positive to take from it, I suppose it's that it wasn't the knee injury that's dogged him for so long.
Yeah, I mean, straight at the time, it looked like it was a muscular injury rather than anything, you know, to do with his knees, which like I say, is a good thing. Maybe he just didn't do his warm-up as, you know, efficiently as what he should have done. He didn't warm up his muscles properly. But, I mean, I think these things can happen. I mean, Fergus said after the game as well that he might have been a bit anxious, which is understandable. He's not played, really, for 2 years, and then gets thrown in for a start as well. So I think they'll bounce back. I mean, obviously, it is only a hamstring injury, so it's nothing that can't be repaired. Maybe Fergie will give him a few runs in the reserves before he puts someone on the first team.
See, I'm a bit like on maybe on the other side of the fence, Dan. We tend to be with each other. I think maybe the hamstring injuries got something to do with sort of the knee injuries. Obviously, but these are big injuries that he's trying to come back from, and it might have something to do with that he's getting a hamstring injury so quickly after coming back. But even then, he's not played enough football for me just to throw him back into the first team. He's had, 30 seconds against Sunderland at the end of last season, maybe a half hour in the reserves, and then suddenly, there you go, Premier League start Owen, have fun with that, and obviously it didn't last very long. And if I'm being honest, I don't think he's going to come back to be the same player that he was before he left.
Do you think it was sort of done as maybe a ploy from Ferguson to try and build up the atmosphere? Because a home game against Wolves, sometimes maybe not quite as up for it as you would normally be for like a game against, I don't know, against a City, an Arsenal, a Chelsea. It's just one of them games where you expect to take 3 points, really, isn't it? And I suppose when you see Owen Hargreaves on the team sheet, you're thinking, Christ, where's this come from? That sort of helped lift the crowd, if anything, Dan. I mean, you were there. Did you get a sense of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was, like you said, it was a massive surprise for everyone. I mean, because I didn't actually normally have the radio on when I go into game, but I didn't this time, and I was playing a few tunes on the old CD player. But and I got in, and I was completely unaware that he was going to play, so it was a surprise. And the fans did seem to be lifted. He got a nice ovation as he got his name read out before the pitch announcer before the game. And I don't know, really, the fact that he went off, and it seemed to, you know, when you get that collective hush around the ground when you see someone pull up like that, it was sad to see, really. And I think a lot of people felt sorry for him. But yeah, I think it might have had an effect on the actual performance of the team, really. I mean, I know it's not the best excuse in the world to have, but I mean, I think that the officers of players were probably looking forward to playing with him again, and to have that removed after, 4 minutes must have been a bit of a blow.
And is that it for Hargreaves, in your opinion, Dov? I mean, is he finished now, or is there still a glimmer of hope? Is there still a way back for him?
Well, I don't think he's finished as such, as in he'll never play football again. I just don't think he'll play back or be at the level it was. For instance, when we won the Champions League with him, I think physically he's probably had it, and I think if he does come back, he'll probably it'd be more of a sort of squad player, because I don't think he'll be able to last sort of 90 minutes week in, week out, every week. I don't think his body will be able to take it after being out for so long.
I just think given a run in the team, I think he's still got a part to play. Obviously, you say a squad player there. I think he can be more than that. I really do. Because obviously, you mentioned the Champions League winning season there, and I thought he was quality throughout that year. Obviously, he had his niggles then as well. But no, I just think given a few games, a bit of confidence, and I think he just needs to get out of his mind that he's not going to get injured. He just needs to think, right, I'm going to avoid these injuries. And I know it's so difficult for him because it does seem to happen every time he steps on a pitch. It's like a curse. No, in terms of his technical ability, I think and what he does for United in terms of harassing players for the ball and just ball winning in midfield, really, I don't think there's anyone sort of better at the moment at doing that. So desperate for him to turn the corner, really, and just hope he does come through it. But anyway.
I mean, his age is a good age as well. He's only like 29, 30, so he's still got a few years ahead of him. Like you say, if he can stay fit, but it's probably more mental. I think we've mentioned it many times before. It's probably more, you know, the mental side of his game now, the believing that he can play a few games in a row that's going to get him through it. But I think he'll be. He's got something to aim for, you know, playing for arguably the best club in the world, and obviously Capello still hopes that he can do a job for England as well. So he's got all the incentives there.
Certainly has. Well, fingers crossed.
It's not like he plays for Scunthorpe and he's thinking.
Dan just picked Scunthorpe out of there.
That was just first name that came to me. I don't know. Oh. I apologise to Scunthorpe fans if you're listening, but
I'm sure there's thousands of them tuning in now.
But, you never know.
Right, well, we'll pick out our player and cabbage of the week now then. Dan, who would it be for you then, player of the week to start with?
Player of the week, I think I'm going to go with Raphael. I thought he played very well last night against City. I thought that he neutralised David Silva quite well. He's obviously arguably one of the best players in the world at the moment. And I thought he played really well. And obviously his little spat with Tevez as well, which endears us to him. So yeah, it's our little Raphael.
Dov, player of the week.
I'm going to give it to Ji-Sung Park. Obviously, for just two goals against Wolves, the winner as well. I was listening to another podcast, and I'm sure this one of
them. Terrible.
I know it's terrible. It's. But it's a good podcast, but I'm not going to mention what one it was. One of the stats, I think, was that Park scored something like 10 goals in his last 12 starts or 12 Premier League games, something like that, which I think that astonished me when I heard that. I had to rewind and check and make sure I heard it properly. So he's going to get it for me after getting what could be a valuable 3 points in the league.
Good stuff. Well, I'm going to give it to, as I mentioned earlier, Michael Carrick. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was our best midfield player. Seemed to control the game and threw himself into tackles, which I'm not used to seeing with Carrick. So, yeah, I just thought he was our best player against City. What about Cabbage then? Dov, start with you this time.
I'm going to give it to a man that I think is fantastic, a man that earns lots of money, a man that really shouldn't get Cabbage of the Week, but John O'Shea is going to get Cabbage of the Week this week. I thought it was pretty rubbish against Wolverhampton Wanderers. Obviously, playing in central midfield, it's not his natural position, but a position he's played before, but I thought he struggled quite a bit. And then I didn't think he was up to much when he came on against City either. Solid, but again, offered nothing on a forward footing, so he's going to get it for me.
Okay. Dan?
Actually, no, I'm going to go with Hernandez. I mean, he's had such a good run sort of last three or four games, but I thought he was poor, and that dive against Wolves was unnecessary and uncalled for. We don't need to see that in the game. So, Javier Hernandez, welcome to England, and you've now got the cabbage.
Very aggressive there, Dan, with that chatting about that dive. You weren't happy on that, were you?
Well, I was there, and I'm 9 miles away, and I knew it was a dive. There's no way. It's unbelievable.
He looked quite sheepish after it as well.
He knew he'd done it.
It
wasn't the best goalkeeping. He did give him an opportunity to go down, but you can't be like 2 yards away and just stick your foot into somebody and go over and then expect up. Anyway, he rightly got a yellow card, and I was happy when he got a yellow card, actually.
Oh dear. Well, my cabbage is Bebe this week. As we talked about earlier, how you can't cross a ball and be paid whatever he's being paid, I find quite incredible. But he's certainly not the only one that professional footballer that can't seem to be able to do it. Not just that, I mean, £7.5 million, and that's the sort of performance you get. wasn't impressed with it. I'm being a bit harsh there, really, because he is obviously new to the club and he's still a young lad. But no, I was hoping that he'd show a bit more, considering he'd been so bright in the Champions League prior to that. So, yeah, Bebe will be my cabbage of the week.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Right, well, we'll move it on then to look at the reserves now. Dov, it was a 2-2 draw in the most recent game, which actually took place this evening against West Brom. And that would be Ole Solskjaer, well, it's his first game since it was officially announced he was joining Mulder.
Like I say, a 2-2 draw against West Bromwich Albion. They pegged us back on two occasions in the game. So there was goals from Marnik Vermeil and Michael Fornasi that were cancelled out by West Brom. Vermeil, he caught West Brom goalkeeper Luke Daniels off guard in the first half with a snapshot. Kemar Roof, he headed home the tee glass for West Brom. Fornasi then headed United into the lead in the second period, only for a quite fantastic goal from Sam Mantum that sort of gave West Brom the draw. At the beginning of the match, it was quite a sort of frenetic game. Both teams sort of going for it. Ryan Tunnicliffe had a shot off target, and Michael Keane, he was playing in midfield in this game. United though went ahead quite early on in the match after 13 minutes from Vermeil. Magnus Ekrem, who has been fantastic for the reserves this season, he carried the ball by a couple of players and then played a neat through ball for Vermeil, who sort of took the ball quickly, hit a low shot from Nigeria, and gave Luke Daniels not very much hope from getting the ball put in the corner. So that was a good start for United. But West Brom, they managed to get level not long after, 21 minutes, they scored. It was a left-wing cross from Joe Matic that found Roof. He found space between Scott Wootton and Richard DeLate to arc home a brown header, so a looping header there that went off the underside of the crossbar. So there you go, 1-1 to West Brom. For the rest of the half, United sort of were on the back foot a little bit, wasted possession a few times as well. So they were looking forward to going in at half-time, let's just say that. But then less than 5 minutes after the break, United went ahead. Michael Fornasi, like I mentioned, he came on as a half-time substitute for Michael Keane. Lost his marker to head home a Magnus Ekrem corner, so that was a bullet header, it was fantastic. So United were in the lead here and really, really on top in this game. But then, unfortunately, West Brom got the goal. This was from Sam Mantum, and it was on 69 minutes, a 20-yard effort that went just on the inside of the post. It's a fantastic goal. And really, from then on, West Brom really had more of the game, applied lots of pressure to the United back line. But fortunately, they didn't manage to score, although they did hit the post in the final moments of the game as well. So 2-2, a quite entertaining game, but maybe a bit of a slack defending from the youngsters. There's also another game, Steve, that is at the Academy. They had a game, sorry, last week on the 6th of November, and this was a 4-0 defeat, unfortunately. I'm not going to go through the goals because they were Wolves goals, and I'm not doing that, but just a few players that had pretty rubbish games were Sean McGinty. He had a particularly bad match. And Luke McCulloch as well. He was making his under-18s debut, and it wasn't really the best debut for him either. Although one chain in light was Jesse Lingard, who had quite a good match, even though United got beat 4-0. So a couple of reserve and academy games there. So it's not been the best time in the... And their respective competitions, but the first team were doing well, and usually it's the other way about over recent weeks.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
And as you know, this is the time where we have an opposition fan on the show, and we're delighted to welcome back Luke Marson from thevillablog.co.uk, who joined us last season, and he's back again. Hello, Luke.
Hi.
Are you glad to be back on the RedCafe.net podcast?
I am, yes, given the luck that I seem to have given my team last season. maybe we can repeat it again this Saturday, but not so sure. But we can discuss all that sort of stuff as we go along.
Indeed. I mean, you say that you bring your team a bit of sort of good luck. It doesn't seem like they've had a lucky season so far, languishing in 14th place in the Premier League.
I do think languishing is a strong word, given how tight the table is at the moment. We've not had as good a season. I think, you know, any team that loses a manager so close to season is going to have a bit of disruption. We've gone through, you could say, won a second manager since then. So, you know, it takes a while to bed things in. And, you know, for the first time in, 4 years, we've actually started to have injuries. You know, it was going to happen eventually. You know, we've had so much luck the last few seasons with not having many players getting injured. It's really kind of transitional season, I think, for us. And we've been a bit unlucky with a couple of... I've been lucky equalisers like Fulham on Saturday, but I'm not too concerned at the moment. And yeah, we might not finish as high as we have done the last few seasons, but you know, Gerard Houllier is making a few changes, and he's got to bring in his own players like any manager has to. So, you know, it's not as bad as I think as it looks to some outsiders.
What are your thoughts on Mr. Houllier? Obviously, he's came in and he seems to be stamping his authority on the club, especially given the recent news reports regarding John Carew. I mean, what's your opinion of him and how do you think he's started?
Well, I have to say I wasn't jumping with joy when I heard he'd been appointed, but at the same time, I wasn't disappointed. He's obviously got some pedigree. He's got a proven track record. He's going to look further than Scotland and the UK for players, which is a real problem. He's also going to use the squad. So he's bringing a lot of benefits that we really needed after having a manager who only wanted to use the same 12 or 13 players. And only scouted from within the sea border. You know, I think it's a good appointment. I'm a little bit concerned that it's not going to be a long term appointment at his age with his health. You know, you can see that maybe in 3 years he's not going to be in charge. And when you're trying to build a club, Manchester United know all about this. You need to have someone who's in for the long term. And I'm not sure whether that is going to be Houllier, but I think he's going to lay some really good groundwork, good ethos, good training, good scouting network. That's the thing we're really crying out for. So I think there are definitely positives. I think he's going to bring a bit more professionalism, probably more of the French style in, which, you know, has worked very well at Arsenal. So yeah, I think considering the other available managers at that time, he probably was the best candidate other than Kevin McDonald, but he wasn't proven. So, you know, I think it isn't a bad appointment for sure.
Good stuff. And matters on the pitch. Let's talk about some of the players that you have. I mean, where are your main threats coming from this season? Is it the usual suspects such as Ashley Young, Gabriel Bonlahor, or is there some new guys coming through?
I think Gabby's he's been injured. He's only going to be on the bench tonight, so I don't know if he's going to start on Saturday. Young has thought he might have a good season, but he's still doing the old tricks of putting free kicks well past the goal and falling over a lot. So, but for me, the real threats are the kind of unknown youth players that we've drafted in, thanks to Kevin McDonald's temporary reign early on in the season. Mark Albrighton already looks an absolutely fantastic Premier League winger. I'm surprised that he's as good as he is. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he got called up in the England squad tomorrow. And I'm almost sure he will be called up before the end of the season. He's kind of come on and changed games sometimes. He's really lively, a lot of skills, a lot of tricks. He can score, he can cross wonderfully, which is something we've struggled to do a little bit without Ashley Young being consistent. So I think he's one of our big danger men at the moment. And Barry Bannon has looked good the few times that I've seen him. Very small, but very quick. I mean, his passing was outstanding against Fulham, including the 40-yard long ball to set up at Albrighton. It certainly wasn't just a hit and hope like some of our usual style of football. Yeah, I think it's some of the new players. I mean, Rio Coca, it looks like a wonderful player now that he's playing under Houllier as well. And we've got Kieran Clark, the other youngster. I mean, those two aren't such danger men, but they're composed and strong players in the middle of the park, which is what we've kind of needed for a while, is some players that can just impose themselves in the middle, because I'm not entirely convinced by Petrov. Yeah, that's kind of where I see our strong points and our kind of danger men at the moment.
Well, it's interesting you actually talk about this, imposing yourselves in the middle of the park, because that's one area that I feel that United are struggling a little and have been for a little while now, is the middle of the park, given that you've got Paul Scholes, Carrick, Fletcher, not really guys who sort of strike fear into opposition teams. I mean, so do you think that's maybe one area where you can look to sort of take control and go on from there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Julio likes to start at the back, so he's trying to build a solid defence. We've not scored many goals in the last few games, but we've also not conceded many. So he's got a strong defence, and then he's looked at strong midfielders like Riakoka. And although Kieran Clark is a centre-back, he's actually been playing him as a defensive midfielder as well. And it's sort of having that solidness in the middle of midfield is really good for us at the moment. Given, as you said, it's been an area where we haven't really done well in. You know, Sidwell has been a very disappointing signing. Petrov's only really had one good season. And against Manchester United, who are well known for that, it's something that we really need to have in place if we're going to have any chance of beating you at the weekend.
What about the sort of the players at United that maybe you feel could cause you some issues? Like Nani looks like he's going to be a doubt for the weekend, but then you've got guys like Hernandez is in fantastic form, Berbatov. I mean, who do you see as a real danger man?
Well, I mean, we've not had problems scoring against you in the last two or three seasons, but our problem has been scoring. And of course, Hernandez, looking at the young, lively players, he's another one. You know, I see Albrighton, I see people like Hernandez. They're the real players at the moment, the young players that are doing the stuff, looking lively, you know, looking like they really just want to play football. And he certainly looks like a guy who could, you know, if we're 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go, you know, he's the guy that maybe could come off the bench and grab you a couple of goals. He to me, looks like, at the moment, one of your danger players.
So, Luke, if there's one player you could have from the United side, and obviously you've got more money than the other team from Manchester, who would you buy and why?
At the moment, it's got to be a striker or a centre midfielder. I have to say that probably I would. I think looking at kind of form, maybe Berbatov. While I think I'd really like Hernandez as a goal scorer, Berbatov's a sort of clever player that some of our players like Albrighton, Downing and Young would actually thrive off. He's like a much, you know, younger, quicker, smarter Heskey in a way. And I think, you know, he's returned to form a bit this season. He's played a lot better than he has in the last season. He doesn't seem to be so, you know, lazy, if you can call his style that. And I think he would add a lot of value to us.
What about at the weekend? Can I get a prediction of you? What do you think the score will be?
Well, I'd rather be playing you tonight than Saturday, given all your injury problems at the moment. As much as we've been playing some fantastic football, you know, our record against you is quite poor, and luck doesn't seem to be with us. So while I think actually having built on the last couple of season results, I do think that it's probably likely to be a Manchester United win. I do think a draw is possible for sure, but I think that's going to depend on how many of your players recover from the sort of viruses and the small niggly injuries that they've had. So I'd probably just edge on a Manchester United victory, given how weak our defence has been compared to previous seasons.
Well, that's something I certainly wouldn't complain about. Luke, well, we have run out of time, unfortunately, but thank you very much for coming on the RedCafe.net podcast. It's an absolute pleasure.
Yep, it's been a pleasure.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, that was the views of our opposition fan this week. We'll just briefly preview the game ourselves now then. Dan, I think it's 1-6 now in the league for Aston Villa. But we've never really found it easy when we've gone to Villa Park, have we?
No, it's a tough place to go, but I think that obviously with Julio in charge, they are quite a negative team now, but they scored 3 against Blackpool the other day just to show they can still score goals. But they've got a decent team, young team, and I think that they'll be up for it. But again, it depends on the fitness levels after last night. Obviously, Nani might be still struggling a little bit, and obviously Evra as well, and of course Raphael. So it depends what, you know, type of team we put out, but I think that really we should be strong enough to beat Villa at Villa Park. It's always a good place to go and play your football as well. So,
Dov, 4-5-1 or 4-4-2?
I was going to get this at away game, Steve. 4-5-1, as always. that's what's going to happen. Berbatov, I think he'll play up front on his own again. And again, it'll be interesting to see who he picks in midfield. Scholes is suspended for the game. So, like Carrick, Fletcher, and probably Anderson or Gibson, if one of them can, or if they can recover from this mysterious virus that seems to be taking out anybody and everybody. Talking about the game, I think Villa, they're a young side, and the stats back up. They had their youngest lineup of the season out against Blackpool of 26 years and 216 days. Yes, there you go. And
all right, Motti. Yeah.
So I think maybe with our experience, obviously, I think we should be able to take 3 points off them as well. And even that, the last team we were beaten at Villa Park was the opening day of the 95-96 season. So that was a little while ago. So I expect a victory at the weekend.
Dov, you mentioned 4-5-1 there. I mean, we played 4-4-2 against Stoke, and I think that's probably one of our better performances this season. You don't think we should possibly look at pairing Berbatov with Hernandez and give him another goal together? Ideally, they should complement each other, really. You know, Hernandez got all the pace. He can get in behind, and Berbatov, obviously, is the one with the touch and can be a bit more creative. So I think it should work on, if you're looking at it, so sort of, if you're looking at it on paper, it should work. But do you think Fergie will do that, or do you reckon he'll go?
I think he'll go with the five midfielders, because from what Luke said, the opposition fan, he is saying that Villa are quite strong in the centre of the park, and that's one area that I think we're weakest. And the only way that we can sort of take hold in the middle of the park is if we play three against teams who are strong in the middle. So that's why I think he'll go with three in the middle of the park at the weekend, just to try and get that foothold against Villa in an area where they're at their strongest.
I just think that we're obviously trailing behind Chelsea, and I think we've got to go for wins, really. And there's nothing to say we're not going to win if we play 4-4-1, 4-5-1, but we might not win if we go 4-4-1. No, I think that we should be a bit more positive and go for the attack. You know, go for it. Well, like I said before, it depends who's available, doesn't it? Really, it should be a good game though. It's a nice lunchtime kickoff as well.
Prediction then? How do you see it going?
I think. Villa, they should be beatable, really. I'm going to go with 1-0 United.
Tight game. Dov?
Stan, are you ready for this? The stats back it up. Villa have only won once in 27 games against United in all competitions. And United have lost just one of the last 29 meetings against Aston Villa. So I think we're definitely not going to get beaten. I think we're going to win. So I think it'll be... I think we'll get a couple. I think it'll be two or three nil. I don't think they'll score against us.
Good stuff. I like
Steve. Steve, go on. You need to get your old prediction out.
Get my prediction out. All right. I think we're going to win 2-1. There you go.
Obviously, one thing I think we should mention as well, just sort of going on with the City game as well, is we're still unbeaten this season. The only team in the country that's unbeaten. And I think that's something that I think Michael Carrick said today, that it's sort of filling the team with confidence as well. Like, we might not be playing the best, but we're unbeaten and nobody else is. So I think the team needs credit for that too.
Well said, Dov. Well said. Right then. Well, before we close this week, we just got one email to look at. It's from James McAllister. To put it short, because it's quite a lengthy email, obviously Rooney's been out now for some time. And James has sort of pondered whether the fact that because Rooney's been out, has that sort of helped the development of the likes of people like Nani, Berbatov, Park, Hernandez, mainly because, well, the responsibility for having to score goals isn't obviously just with Rooney anymore. Like last season, he was, of course, the outstanding player, the 30-odd goals. But now it's having to be shared around the team. So has that sort of helped? I mean, a lot of people have said, well, it's been a big hindrance not having Rooney, but James is looking at it on the other side of the coin, and it might have actually been a positive.
Like you say, I mean, I think a lot of other players have stepped up and taken the role, you know, away from Rooney of scoring goals. He wasn't scoring goals when he was in the team, but I think a lot of the time when you've got someone like Wayne Rooney in your team ahead of you, you always probably looking to give him the ball more than doing things yourself. And I think that, you know, the goal on Saturday epitomised the fact that Park took responsibility upon himself and you know, he scored a good goal. You know, maybe if Rooney was on the pitch, he might not have done the same thing. He might not have made the same decisions. And, you know, thankfully it paid off. And obviously Rooney, when he comes back, it will be interesting to see how he plays and what reception he gets and everything else. But for the time being, we've not lost a game, like you say, all season. And we have been scoring goals as well, which is a good thing for the rest of the team, like I say, chipping in and subsidising what Rooney's not given us so far.
Just quick hypothetical then. I mean, would you, Wayne Rooney, if he was fit and available now, would he start?
No, I don't think he would. I think he'd probably, saying that, it's Wayne Rooney, isn't it? And I don't know, if I was Fergie, you'd probably have to play him. But if I was Manchester United, I'd make him sit on the bench a little bit and then bide his time. Because he can't just, like you say, he's not been in brilliant form all season anyway. So he doesn't really deserve to get on in front of, you know, Hernandez especially and Berbatov. So I'd make him sweat and sit on the bench a little bit. Come on for 10 minutes here and there.
Turning it on his head a little bit. Do you think that he's maybe, Fergie's looking at this and going, right, okay, Rooney's injured. Let's see how the team does without him. Right, okay, the team's doing quite well, unbeaten. Maybe we can afford to get rid of him and bring in a couple other players to strengthen the team in other areas. Do you think that might be crossing his mind a little bit? Because obviously that's happened before. An example would be when sort of Beckham lost his place to Solskjaer and was promptly sold in that summer after an incident during that season. So maybe Fergie's looking at it like, okay, well, we're managing not bad without Wayne. We're winning games, scoring goals, so it might not be as expendable as he thought it was.
Possibly, yeah, but I mean, I can't see the fact that Fergie's, you know, signing down for a 5-year contract means he's going to sell him in the summer. He might very well do. He might, you know, give him another year and then sell him. It was probably the best outcome for both parties, like we've discussed before. But no, Rooney still knows that he's an instrumental part of that team. You know, he's probably the, like you say, you know, the one player that stands out as being, you know, a top class player. So, with the exception possibly of Nani. Rooney will be sat at home thinking, well, sat in USA thinking that he's going to walk into the team, and he's probably right to think that. But I think Fergie will maybe just show him, like, you're not just going to walk straight back in, especially after what happened last month.
Certainly be interesting to see when he does come back. But that just about brings an end to episode 55 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Please do send any sort of questions, comments, or anything you like to our email address, which is podcast@redcafe.net. And that just leaves all of us to say thanks a lot for tuning in once again, and we'll see you next week.